Hi, it's Karen Webster, and welcome to The Matchmaker Is In. I'm here today with Brent Messenger, the global head of community for Fiverr. Brent, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're going to have a great conversation today about the Fiverr marketplace, which makes it easy for freelancers, we now seem to call them gig workers, with skills and the capacity to make those skills available to buyers in need of their services. It's a fascinating business, one that has grown explosively. You guys have been at this since 2010. And I want to take our conversation in a variety of directions today, give people a little context about how you started, how you keep the community engaged, and the impact on the gig economy overall. So, Brent, if you're okay with that, wanna dive in?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, I appreciate you saying the skilled gig economy. This is something we think a lot about. I think people say they use the term gig economy and they mean it very broadly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, I think people don't know exactly what it means. So we've been working on kind of talking a little bit more about the skilled freelance economy or the skilled gig economy. And so the reason I mention that is because there are services delivery drivers, transportation, people who drive for Uber and Lyft and companies like that. And then there are people who have a skill that they've either learned through practice or learned through education that they're trying to apply to the marketplace. So that's what Fiverr is. Fiverr is a skilled marketplace for digital freelance services, and we think we're the largest one in the world in all likelihood.
So Brent, how did it get started? 2010, I can think of many reasons why Fiverr decided to create such a marketplace, but why don't you give us the story?
Yeah, I find it to be such a fun kind of story. A couple of entrepreneurs, one named Shai Winiger and the other one named Mika Kaufman, got together and they thought, what could we do? It's sort of this conversation they were having back and forth. What would people do online for $5? How could we make a marketplace for opportunity for people where they can earn money doing something simple and easy to deliver? So what would people do for $5? That was sort of the central question, and that's where Fiverr was born. And what they found was, you know, people would do all kinds of things. A lot of them sort of silly, you know, I will sing happy birthday, to a friend, or even things like, you know, I will do data entry, 100 lines of data entry for you for $5. So they realized pretty quickly that, hey, people were actually going to apply skills to this. Some people were started to say things like, I'll do a voiceover for you, or I'll do a quick illustration for you. And I think they realized that there was much more potential here than just, you know, someone doing something silly for $5.
When I've read a little background about the start of Fiverr, and the $5 price point was also pretty calculated to get over the friction of actually taking advantage of a skill like this on demand, so to speak, in an environment that this was still perceived as being pretty new. So the $5 price point was, what will people do for $5? But it was also one of these things that people didn't think much about spending $5. It was not a hurdle for people to buy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. It was sort of what's the lowest? What's like you said? What's the threshold for some activity like this? And the incredible thing is that, you know, not to jump ahead too far, but here we are now in 2017, and the $5 price point, it exists for certain types of gigs on Fiverr. You'll see it all over the place for certain types of things. But the marketplace now has people selling things for $10,000. So it's the origin, but it's certainly not where we're rooted anymore.
Right. So how did the pivot or the evolution happen? Once the founders saw that they were attracting an interesting mix of skilled professionals who wanted to be hired for these short-term engagements, how then did they go out to solicit more of those people who were interested in finding buyers for their skills?
You know, so it's interesting. Obviously, the company's been around for a long time, so I wouldn't say there's necessarily a pivot where there was a change that was made that was just definitive that switched the marketplace into what it is now. It sort of was an evolution. But I think what did happen was as the marketplace got more traction and people became more aware of it, more skilled people were coming to the marketplace looking for opportunity. And we were able to go out and then market to different types of buyers, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, now we do a lot of outreach and have a lot of conversations with even businesses that are using Fiverr to solve problems internally where they're short-handed, short-staffed, and they're using Fiverr to solve problems. Now, it's a really, you might think, well, that sounds like traditional temping, or that sounds like some of the other freelance marketplaces that are out there. The one thing that makes Fiverr really different that I think your audience might be interested in is that Fiverr is, we have taken services and turned them into a product. And what I mean about that is it's sort of more, our model is more similar to something like Amazon. A seller will come into our marketplace and will say, I have a service. This is how long I think it'll take me to do it. This is what I want to charge. Here are my terms. And they put it out. And a buyer will browse through our marketplace, find something they want to buy, put it in their shopping cart, and check out. So it's productized service in a very different way. On most other freelance marketplaces, people will contract in a much more sort of traditional freelance way, which is to say they may have a buyer will come to them, ask them for a proposal, or even ask them for a sample of the work that they'll eventually do, and then they'll make a determination about whether they want to transact together. In our marketplace, a buyer decides they want to transact with someone before they even start.
Well,
it's a little different.
By productizing their services and skills, it does make the transaction pretty straightforward. I was also reading that the founder said that they were thinking more about a catalog business than a surrogate HR department, making it easy for buyers to browse and then check out and buy. Obviously, then payment has been an important part of your platform from the very beginning.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that has always been their frame. What we think is so fascinating about it are the parallels to e-commerce. You know, e-commerce in 1996, we say internally sometimes, we're like Amazon in 1996. There were a lot of people buying online. You think of, you know, it's the holiday shopping season right now. Back in 1996, there were a lot of people that were buying online, mm-hmm. and companies like Amazon were growing and growing and growing. But that was the tip of the iceberg. Now we know that almost, you know, I don't even know what percentage of holiday shopping will be done online, but every year it goes up. But we feel like we're in that same position too. 97% of all freelancing happens offline, and yet Fiverr has explosive growth right now. So we think that this is just the tip of the iceberg. And study after study will tell you that more and more people are starting to work in freelance marketplaces or in the gig economy. So we're pretty confident that that's going to be the case.
Help us understand what people are buying. So what are buyers putting in their shopping carts?
You know, a lot of things, and sort of every quarter it seems like a broader and broader mix. But some of the most popular things that are being bought on Fiverr are logos. So companies, you know, every company needs a logo. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where I think unless you're extremely happy with your logo or you're a longstanding brand, you may even get the itch ever so often to switch it up. So there seems to be an infinite appetite for people who want logos. There's also people buying, you know, web development services, so websites they need built or landing pages they need built. We do a lot of social media marketing work, so we have people helping people set up Instagram and their Facebook and Twitter accounts and things like that, doing some management for them. Voiceover is a very popular category. People who, you know, every company these days, it's really interesting. We think in 2017, a website, social media presence, you know, an explainer video, a well-produced explainer video that talks about what a company does. These are all sort of table stakes mm-hmm. for businesses of all sizes. You've got to have these things if you want to going to do better if you have a social presence. So it's not hard to imagine why these things are being purchased, and they are, you know, those are our most popular categories.
But the professional skills marketplace has a very long tail. I can think of lots of things: translation services, tutoring, lots of different things that people could productize and put in your storefront. Do you capture all of those different kinds of professions and skills?
There are 6,000 new gigs added to the marketplace every day.
Every day.
And there are hundreds every day, 6,000 new gigs. And there are hundreds of categories, subcategories, I should say. So we have our website set up into broad categories where we try to capture all those things, and then everyone who sets up a gig sets up as in a subcategory. So there are hundreds of subcategories. So you're exactly right. There is a place for all of those things and more. I couldn't even begin to tell you all the things that are on the marketplace. It's truly massive. You know, there's a transaction completed on Fiverr every 3.75 seconds.
Wow.
So someone is offering, if there's a service that a small business needs, or really any business needs, I promise you they can find it on Fiverr. They just need to look. It's there. As you say, translation services, every language you can think of. I mean, just on and on and on.
Help us understand the profile of the provider of the service or the skill. We'll talk about the buyer in just a minute. How many of these professionals are doing this as a full-time avocation versus I have some capacity, I'll put my skill in the catalog. If I get a job, great. If I don't, I still have this full-time or part-time job that I'm pursuing.
So I'll give you the official answer there, and then I'll dive a little bit deeper on it. The official answer is we're studying that ourselves, and we will release at some point down the road more data on exactly that question. It's a tricky one to define. Because you have to determine what constitutes full-time work, and you have to sort of make a determination. You know, that varies state to state in the United States, and so it becomes kind of a more complex question. We've been examining that a lot in the context of open enrollment for healthcare, for example. Mm-hmm. We pushed our community toward a product called Stride Health, where we were hoping that people who were doing this full-time who wanted access to healthcare could get it. So we started to study a little bit. How many people would be eligible? Would they be eligible for subsidies, you know, through the Affordable Care Act and so forth? So it's kind of a complex question. What we do know is that there are a lot of people that are doing this full time. We have, you know, more than a few people on the marketplace that have made over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Several that make, you know, close to it, just under. So there are a lot of people doing this full time. A lot of people, like you say, are doing it on the side, and I think a lot of people, even more, are doing something which I think is incredibly valuable for them personally and for the economy, which is they're testing a new skill.
Mm-hmm.
Fiverr's an interesting place to do this because you don't have to go into the marketplace and say, I'm a graphic designer, and you know, I'll write a proposal and I'll do a sample design for you, and we can work on, you know, in that sort of traditional model. Compete that way. What you can do is you could say, I'm relatively new at this, here's my portfolio, and I'm going to price my service accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to see if anyone buys it. It's the ultimate minimum viable product platform, right? If you want to try a new skill, you think you've got the chops, you can set up a gig and see how it works. So I think you've got multiple categories of people who are trying to supplement their income, you have people who are trying to earn a full-time income, you have people who are literally just testing to see what they, you know, what their capabilities are, and maybe others even just sort of pursuing a dream. Anecdotally, we've heard a lot of those stories. There was a woman who was doing these incredible designs that she would take. She was doing this very intricate mosaic design and then digitizing it, you know, taking a photo of it and sending it to people. This was her gig. And it was kind of an unusual gig. And so someone ordered it, and they said, there's no way you could have done this by hand. I reject this. I don't think this is true.
Hmm.
And this woman, she said, well, here's a video of my entire process. And she did the whole thing. And the person came back to her and said, geez, given the amount of time you turned that around so fast, I just couldn't imagine that this could be worth your time now that I've seen your video. And she said, well, I'm not really doing it to make a ton of money. I just enjoy it, and I wanted to see if someone else would like it.
Wow.
So she was retired, and she thought, I'm going to do this project for somebody. And she was just, the payment she got was a form of appreciation. So I think it's just, there's a full range of people doing things.
It's amazing, though, that a platform like this can offer so many different types of people the opportunity to either earn a living full-time or, as you say, to be given some compensation and appreciation for their work. But also, quite a few people, as you point out, and our survey statistics support this too, people use it to supplement their income because they're saving for a house or college education for their kids or the family vacation. So it's an opportunity to supplement their income that may not have been available to them before, leveraging skills that they obviously have and use throughout their professional careers if they're working full-time somewhere else.
Yeah, and what we hear a lot also are people who are doing exactly what you say. They're supplementing their income. Maybe they're doing some gigs at night after their full-time job that eventually are able to transition into doing mm-hmm. their freelance gig full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens quite a bit it's sort of the smart way to do it, right? If you're trying this out, you don't need to jump in, quit your day job and walk out. You can kind of ease into this, build up a clientele. Just like any marketplace, you need to establish yourself, get mm-hmm. some reviews, obviously deliver quickly and accurately and all those good things. And if you do that, then you can sort of build up a professional profile on a marketplace that would allow you to make that transition. So we see that all the time.
So you manage the community on a global basis. How do you look at the community and assess people that are doing excellent work and reward them perhaps, and people who perhaps are not getting great reviews and you need to investigate why that is? Help us understand the governance process that you guys have.
Yeah, well, we have, like most marketplaces, we have algorithms that help us with a lot of this. If people have a lot of complaints, or if there are, they're not delivering in a timely manner, they're not accurate, things like that. They're not even responding to inquiries about their gig very quickly. Those kinds of things, those are red flags. And the algorithm helps, push those people down into the marketplace, and conversely helps elevate people who are delivering great quality, mm-hmm. on time, very responsive, the reviews are great, all of that stuff. It pushes them up in the marketplace. So it's very typical of a marketplace business. As far as my perspective from the community, so I'm, like you mentioned, I'm the global head of community. My focus is really kind of different. I come from an offline advocacy background where mm-hmm. I've been a traditional grassroots organizer, bringing people together. So a lot of what my team does is we go around the world and we create opportunities for community members to come together, talk about their challenges, help each other build skills, and create a support network mm-hmm. for buyers and sellers who want to do better at whatever it is that they're pursuing. And our lens generally is sort of entrepreneurial doers, small business owners, freelancers, one-person businesses, non-employer small businesses. In the United States, there are like 26 mm-hmm. million of these types of people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're creating a community of support for that.
So I want to come back to that in just a minute. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about the buyer side and how that has evolved over time. Who are your buyers?
That's a great question. So our buyers really is a full range. It is a large chunk of it are those small businesses that I mentioned. We're talking again, one in two person small businesses, or these what the government would call non-employer small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of those, lots and lots of brick and mortar small businesses around the United States. And then all kind of all the way up to large companies. And that's the thing that's evolved more recently, is we have now, we've in fact even need to adapt, we're even in the process of adapting the product to accommodate the needs of larger businesses who come on and said, geez, you know, I found out a couple of my employees were buying gigs on Fiverr to help them complete their job. And I thought, geez, this is an efficient, you know, use of our capital. So as a company, can you create an account that would allow us to access this across departments and all these other kinds of things?
Hmm.
So it's really the full range. You're talking, you know, solo entrepreneurs all the way up to large companies now at this point.
Interesting. And has that interest increased over the last couple of years because companies are looking to rebalance the staff mix inside their organizations and save money on headcount?
You know, I think that's a good guess. You're right. Yes, it has evolved over the last couple of years. I think it's possible that they're looking to save money on headcount, but I also think it's possible that employees, and we're studying this as well, I think it's possible that employees have just become more comfortable with saying, mm-hmm. here's a task that's not really something I can either complete on time, or it's not the best use of my time at this moment. I would like to outsource it. And because it's different, it's a different model, it's not going to your boss and saying, hey, I would like to hire a freelancer to do part of my job,
mm-hmm.
which is a very difficult sell. What you would say is, I have this spreadsheet that I've been working on, and I don't really understand the macros that well, and you know, I need to do a little bit of finessing. It's just not coming out the way I want. I can go on, you know, YouTube and watch videos on how to figure it out, or I can ask around the office. Or if you're okay with it, you know, I could spend $50 on Fiverr and someone will just send it back to me working the way I want it to. You know, and I think that's what's happened more than anything, is people have realized there's efficiencies in some of these tasks that they can gain by going on a marketplace like Fiverr and just getting someone to do it. Again, thinking of it more in terms of tasks rather than roles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, what you've described is interesting because it's purely incremental for the person with the skills who now has the ability to make $50 times however many times that request comes in, and it's an opportunity for the employee to be more efficient and not waste the 6 hours asking people and struggling through it him or herself. So it's a interesting transfer of value, actually.
One of my favorite stories was talking to a company for whom we're doing this, a larger company. And the employee that brought it to their boss's attention said, I sat on this for 6 months because it was my secret. And then said, but you know, ultimately I thought it was better for the organization, so I shared it. But you know, for a time, I looked like the superstar because I was able to accomplish all these things. And this particular person was actually just going out of pocket for it. They were like, oh, whatever, it's, you know, I can afford this, it's not that big of a deal. It's a better use of my time. Maybe I'll be able to leave the office at 5 o'clock tonight instead of 7. You know, so I think that was sort of the way they were thinking about it.
Interesting. Let's go back to the notion of community. And one of the topics that invariably comes up when we talk about the gig economy and the gig economy workforce is the trade-off between having the ability to take on a number of freelance jobs and the lack of benefits, whether they're health benefits or retirement benefits, that comes along with that. How do you view your responsibility as a marketplace in making those kinds of services available to your workforce?
So that's that's such an important question. The framework, just to take a step back, is that a company like Fiverr is not an employer.
Mm-hmm.
We're a marketplace, and so we're bringing people together. But as you point out, there are needs for these people that are in the marketplace that aren't necessarily being met, or I should say are difficult for them to meet privately. So in our country, healthcare is generally through an employer.
Mm-hmm.
The Affordable Care Act was put into place to try to create an opportunity for people to get health insurance outside of their employer. And that, you know, that exists, but it's still, I don't think everyone's aware of it. I don't think people are, you know, sure how to take advantage of it. And so there are still a lot of people that are uninsured that could be insured.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a concern for us. Fiverr as a company, when we look at our community, we're concerned with anything. So really the bottom line here is that being a freelancer, being a small business person, being an entrepreneur is about risk. It's about taking risks and managing risks. And Fiverr wants to support people who are willing to take risks. Our marketplace is dependent upon it. So we always say that when you're a freelancer or when you're an entrepreneur, you may fall. You may, you know, you take a risk, you fall down. We'd like to make the distance that you fall a little less, a little shorter, a little safer landing. So we think about things like health insurance. We think about things like 401ks. We think about things like flexible spending, FSAs and things like that. So while it's hard for us to engage too much in these conversations because we're not an employer and we don't want to be classified as an employer, we're still trying to solve these problems. And the way we're doing that is by getting our community together, helping them amplify their voice so that they can talk to decision makers, legislators, et cetera, and to ask for those things. And then we're also engaging in those conversations directly. So I've had conversations since I've been at Fiverr with U.S. senators, talk to them about portable benefits and things like that. So we're really doing our best to sort of become the voice of the entrepreneur, the small business person, to help them amplify their voice to get the things they need. And there are a lot of things. And frankly, our system's just not set up well for it yet. You know, as I said, there was one study that said by 2020, 40% of the workforce will be contract or freelance. We're just not set up from a legal perspective to handle that, the country. So we have a lot of work to do, and Fiverr, we have a role in pushing that conversation.
But, well, there's an opportunity to create an ecosystem of service providers who can certainly provide those kinds of services to your marketplace suppliers as well. So I think there's lots of different ways to make that, you know, to make those services available and remind your marketplace participants that there's a need to address this, and there may be others who can help them through it. Quick question on payment before we wrap, because that is something we think a lot about, and obviously something you've thought a lot about too, since it's a very important part of keeping your marketplace working and certainly keeping your buyers and sellers sticky. Help us understand payment acceptance, payment payout. How do you manage that part of your business?
Yeah, so it's all handled through the platform. A buyer will come in, and like I said, they'll put the gig in their shopping cart, and they'll pay for it. And once it's delivered, the payment is made to the freelancer, and you know they're able to take. They can either let it sit there in their account, or they can take that payment out whenever they like. So it's a pretty simple process. We typically don't have a lot of problems with payment. People, you know, because of the way we're set up, again, because it's productized, it's psychologically the buyer knows that they're paying for this, unless there's a complete, you know, failure to deliver, which is obviously a very low percentage of the time, and so it's, you know, it's a fairly seamless transaction.
And how do you guys make money?
So Fiverr takes a percentage of the gig. They take there's a small transaction fee on the buyer side, and then there's a fee taken from the seller. And the way we justify the fee from the seller is freelancers, and this is, you know, what most would tell you, especially if you were in the offline freelancing world. Freelancers spend most of their time going out trying to find the gig.
Yep.
So what we say is, if you come into our marketplace, we'll find the gigs. Our responsibility is deal flow, if you will, to bring opportunities to you. Your responsibility is to accept them and do the work. So we take away that prospecting part of the freelancer's day and solve that problem for them. And in exchange, they pay us a percentage of the jobs they do.
Well, it's a fascinating marketplace, and one that's obviously grown and developed and expanded worldwide since 2010. How many jobs on the marketplace today, if you had to guess? You probably know the exact number.
It's actually, I don't. It's in the millions. I mean, as I said, there are 6,000 gigs added every day, and a transaction every 3.75 seconds. So it's a huge, huge number of jobs on the market today.
Well, Brent, thanks so much for your insight into the platform and some of the great things that you're doing to bring awareness to the needs of this freelance small business individual professional with skills marketplace opportunity and the people who are providing it. It was a pleasure talking today.
Thanks, Karen. It was fun talking to you as well.
Thank you, and happy holidays to you. And thanks everyone who listened today.
You
have
too.
A great rest of the day. Bye-bye now.